Our third speaker is Allison Weir, whom I met several years ago after she had come back from Gaza, where she had done some coverage of the Intifada, with a very, very fascinating slideshow, and even more fascinating story about her own journey to realizing what the challenges are to objective coverage. Allison Weir is the executive director of Americans New, an organization dedicated to providing Americans with information on topics of importance that are misreported or underreported in the American media, with a special focus on the Middle East. She has been a journalist on and off for many years and was associated with the Center for Investigative Reporting, served as an editor at the Women's Sports Magazine, freelancer for the San Francisco Examiner, Rolling Stone, and other publications.
And the Michigan Daily.
can't leave that out. All the Michigan alumni get after me. Yes, gotcha. Another one. She was the education writer for the Pacific Sun, author of a children's book published by E.P. Dutton, and most recently editor of Marin Scope newspaper in Sausalito, California. Allison spent a month traveling alone throughout Gaza and the West Bank as a freelance journalist and speaks throughout the country on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. In the presentation, she describes her experiences in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, shows slides of the area, and gives a brief sketch of the history of the conflict, and describes her organization's detailed studies of American press coverage of the area and her meetings with editors of newspapers across the country. Her articles have appeared in a variety of websites, books, and magazines. Among these are Gaza, a report from the front, published in the New Intifada, articles in the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, San Francisco Bay View newspaper, Counterpunch, The Link, Z Magazine, and chapters in The Censored 2005, and several upcoming books. If Americans New has completed 7 statistical studies of U.S. news media, including 2-year studies of the New York Times, the 3 major network primetime news programs, and the Associated Press. In addition, the organization has created 4 videos on Israel-Palestine and is in the process of producing a longer documentary to be released next year. Allison has given 2 briefings on Capitol Hill, has spoken extensively throughout the country. A speech she gave in Washington, D.C. at the Center for Policy Analysis was broadcast nationally on C-SPAN. Among the numerous universities and colleges where she has been invited to speak are the Harvard Law School, Columbia, Stanford, Berkeley, the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, and the Naval Postgraduate Institute. She is the subject of a documentary produced by Alternate Focus on news coverage of Israel-Palestine and appears in 2 others. She has received the Truth and Justice Award from the American Muslims for Jerusalem, the Islamic Community Award for Courage, the Excellence for Advocacy and Media Fairness Award from the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and in March of 2004 was inducted into honorary membership of Phi Alpha Literary Society, founded in 1845 at Illinois College. The award cited her as, quote, courageous journalist lecturer on behalf of human rights, the first woman to receive an honorary membership in Phi Alpha history. Allison Weir.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you for that very nice introduction. Should have thrown in the kitchen sink too. It's nice to follow two such wonderful speakers, because now I know that you've gotten your money's worth. You know, 2 out of 3 is good. So takes the pressure off.
That's a good food.
and wonderful food. So maybe I should just sit down. Thank you for inviting me to be here tonight. I'm very honored to be at this gathering. Tonight I'll tell you a little bit about my own personal journey and a case study. Sadly, it won't be directed specifically to Muslims and to Islam, but it will be a case study with empirical data that I think will shed a great deal of light on what's going on. And it won't be very happy light, to tell the truth, despite the fact I believe very strongly in journalism. The press is the most powerful institution in this country, I feel. It's a public trust, which the you will read in the Statement of Principles on every website of every newspaper, the American Society of Newspaper Editors, the Associated Press. I believe strongly it is a trust, and I think the trust is being betrayed, but you'll see why I think that. Everything that Americans think that they know about the world, but especially about something not in their local neighborhood, comes through the media. So if they don't know about Islam in the Middle East, it is because the media are failing in what we should be doing, not because people are stupid or lazy, I believe. We all are lazy at times, but I think it's a systemic failure. What I'd like to do is start out and just tell my own background, because about 6 years ago, I'll be talking tonight, my case study of the media will have to do with coverage of Israel-Palestine. And 6 years ago, like most Americans in this country, I knew very little about Israel and Palestine. I don't happen to be Jewish or Muslim or Middle Eastern, and to me it seemed confusing and distant and irrelevant to my daily life. And so, like most Americans, I skimmed the headlines on the topic, accepted the confusion of what I read, and I moved on. But then I began to see those images that we do see occasionally of children throwing stones against tanks. And I finally began to be curious enough about this issue to decide I would try to follow it just a little bit. At that time, I was the editor of the Sausalito newspaper, writing about very local stories. So this was in my spare time. And when I looked into these stories, when I followed them, it did appear to me very quickly that I was hearing one side with great detail and the other side with almost no detail. That troubled me because as journalists we feel we should, as was spoken earlier, we should try to cover the whole story, not one side or just the other. And so I began to look into this issue more, and finally, at using the internet, reading what was going on every day as you can, reading the stories you probably have read all of your lives perhaps, but for me this was the first time, it began to seem to me that this was, and then looking at my daily newspaper and listening to NPR and watching the news, it seemed to me that this was perhaps the most covered-up story I had ever seen. And I used to be involved with the Center for Investigative Reporting. I have seen cover-ups and the exposés that happens. This one seemed to be more substantial and to have lasted longer than anything else I could think of. It seemed so important to me, in fact, that I quit my job in Sausalito, a very nice place, and I traveled over to the West Bank and Gaza Strip to see for myself what was going on. As journalists, that's sort of our inclination to do. I went as a freelance journalist, that is the lowest of the low, and traveled alone. I had no organization guiding or sponsoring me of any kind whatsoever. And it was the most unusual trip that I have ever undertaken. I had wanted to see things for myself on that trip, I thought, but as I landed on February 7th, I believe it was 2001, my return flight set for a month later, I experienced a pang of the disquiet I had been trying to ignore. What was it going to be like for me as a single female traveler to wander alone through a Muslim land that was in the middle of a violent uprising? And that was, we are constantly told, extremely hostile to women in general, and in particular to Americans. What would it be like for me? What I discovered in a month of traveling haphazardly and randomly in the Palestinian territories, throughout the Gaza Strip and in various parts of the West Bank, was that these were but two of many myths about this region that are, as you know, quite false. That they are as untrue as they are widely held. The reality was, as you all know, was that I was welcomed. I was invited to stay in people's homes. I was treated with respect. I was completely safe, except when I came too near the Israeli military. And when I told Palestinians I was an American, the invariable response was welcome. I wish that this were all that I had discovered on that trip, but it is not. I also discovered firsthand what it was like to see entire communities destroyed, trees uprooted, children with bullets in their stomachs and in their backs and in their heads. I discovered what it was like to be with parents just after their young son has been killed, hearing the mother and sisters weeping and weeping and weeping and weeping, seeing the father sleepwalking in a bad dream from which you know he'll never wake up. I discovered what it's like to talk with a woman whose best friend has just been killed, to be with a family and their handsome son when the doctor tells you something he hasn't yet found the correct time to tell them, that their son is totally and eternally paralyzed. I discovered what it was like to be shot at, to arrive at a street corner and find young soldiers sitting in tanks with machine guns aimed straight at you. At night, you couldn't really see the soldiers, but you saw the flashlight with which they signal whether or not you are allowed to continue driving, to continue living. I discovered this was routine. In other words, I discovered what it's like in Palestine and how Israel is using my tax money. And so when I returned, I began an organization called If Americans Knew. Among our many activities have been to focus on the media, to discover why we are not learning more of these facts, why we are not learning that we give Israel well over $8 million per day of our tax money. And what we've decided to do, journalists are much more interested in facts than in theories. So I was looking for a statistical and objective way to study the coverage of Israel-Palestine. And I decided to look at, to take a category that would be as significant as possible and as immune from subjective bias as possible and count and statistically, quantitatively studyable. So we did studies of the major, a number of the major media. We actually have begun one on the Washington Post. I can give you some of the early results on that maybe at the end. But we decided to look at how deaths were covered among both populations. Since I like to think that we all believe that all human beings are equally valuable, their deaths equally tragic, and that's sort of our philosophy, that we should hear about both, not just one side or just the other side. We need all of the information. So the first thing that you need to do in this kind of study is to determine the baseline, what you compare that the reporting to. So the first thing was to learn how many people were killed in the first year of the current uprising, the current intifada. And we used an Israeli human rights group and found it was 165 Israelis and 549 Palestinians that had been killed by the other side during this first year. Now the first year we chose to study because first impressions are so powerful. This is what leads everybody in America, your neighbors, your communities, to feel, to conclude who initiated the violence, who is retaliating, who is the victim, who is just defending their population. So the first year is very, very important. This was what was going on. Let's look at some of the coverage. I won't give every one of our charts tonight. But we found, for example, these were the three primetime network news shows. We discovered that they were reporting Israeli deaths at rates up to four times greater than they were reporting Palestinian deaths. Now the question is, how can it exceed 100%? You can see in one case it's over 200%. In our study, we were studying every report of a death for either population, including follow-up reports, parents mourning for their dead children the day before. This makes it more real. If you missed the paper one day, you see it the next day. So we felt a most accurate study would count those as well. What was very surprising even to us was to find that how often the coverage of Israeli deaths exceeded 100%. Now another way of looking at that is to look at how children's deaths were covered, because children's deaths are especially tragic to most of us, I believe. We are moved by them. We think of our own children, perhaps. We tend to think that children are illegitimate targets of strife, and when they are killed, they are perhaps more newsworthy than adults. So let's see, first of all, how many were killed. The answer is 28 Israeli young people and 131 Palestinians. Now, how was this covered? In this case, we see the distortion has increased quite a bit over already very bad distortion. Now we see, this isn't Fox News again, this is the major networks that are a little bit along the lines of the New York Times or the Washington Post in terms of people viewing them as fairly reliable, non-political sources. And we find that in one case, it's almost 14 times greater. Another way I feel of looking at this data is sort of interesting to do this. In this chart, the dark blue, the blue column are the Israeli reports, and the red column are the Palestinian. And the dark blue are the number of reports that had exceeded the number of deaths that actually occurred. The vast empty red column are the number of deaths among Palestinian young people that were never covered at all. So in other words, what our fellow Americans are comparing in their minds is this to this, sorry, instead of this to this. And keep in mind, we are not talking about amount of words, about personal information, about context. My own view is that if we did a study of that sort, which would be valuable but very time intensive, I have a feeling the distortion would grow far beyond what I'm describing tonight. To me, this is most likely the tip of the iceberg. Now, it's interesting to look at this chart because in this case, we charted the reports chronologically over the course of the first year. This is the New York Times, a study of their headlines and lead paragraphs for young people, 17 and below, the international definition of children, and many are far, far below. So the first line, if you can see it, I hope, is the Times reports on Israeli children's deaths. The next one will be the curve of the Israeli children's deaths that actually took place during that first year. And you can see it's following that same curve. It's lower since because of the follow-ups. The next curve will be the New York Times reports on Palestinian young people's deaths during that first year. And interestingly, you see it's following the Israeli curve, lower, but following that curve. Then the next curve will be the Palestinian children who actually were killed during that first year. And here it is. Now, this is what the charts look like for basically every one of the media we've looked at. There's, you know, naturally some variation, but this is basically what we keep finding over and over again. The three networks, the New York Times, the Associated Press, local papers such as the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Jose Mercury, we keep seeing this. Now, are these patterns continuing? That was the first year. It's not easy to be a journalist. People, we shouldn't expect perfection. You know, it's very courageous, difficult work for many of these journalists. So maybe the media got better by 2004. We were doing our studies in 2005, so we decided to also look at the more recent data to see what that would show us. It's very important to remember also that in 2004, the media consistently told us that the violence was reduced in the Intifada, that the violence had lessened considerably. Well, the first thing, of course, you need to do is how many people were killed. In this case, we're looking at children in that year. And we see that 8 Israeli children were tragically killed, and 179 Palestinian children tragically were killed. Now, that's 22 to 1. As you'll recall, and we also have a chart for all ages where there's also that same distortion, the Israeli death rate had gone down considerably in 2004, happily. For the Palestinian population, it had increased significantly for all ages and for children. So when someone is reporting that the violence has decreased, they are using Israeli-centric terminology without question. Again, we see the same type of distortion that we saw before. And again, well, this one, just quickly, other groups have done studies. For example, I don't think I have this in my presentation tonight, but one of our first studies, I showed it to a Stanford professor of journalism, and he was astounded, and luckily, he was one of the few he wasn't courageous enough to use our work, but he was courageous enough to do his own study, and it corroborated what we had found. Now, other groups have done these types of studies. This is National Public Radio is often considered more reliable than the more commercial networks. And in this time period, they were being pressured as being pro-Palestinian. There were boycotts. They lost a lot of money because they were supposedly pro-Palestinian. So Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a respected longtime media watchdog organization, did a study of their coverage to discover whether or not it was distorted. And they found out, yes, actually it was distorted, but in the opposite direction. Because, for example, they had covered approximately 90% of Israeli children's deaths and about 20% of Palestinian children's deaths. Now, Seth Ackerman, who did this study, I think gave his report a brilliant title, which is The Illusion of Balance, Fairness. The Illusion of Balance. NPR was covering almost equal numbers, sometimes I think exactly equal numbers of deaths. But what its listeners did not know and were not told was that they were hearing about a very high percentage of one population's tragedies and a very low percentage of another population's tragedies. I know I'm right at the end of my time period, so let me see what I guess I'll just do one more chart and then we can maybe talk about more afterwards. This was another study of the San Jose Mercury News. This is a daily newspaper in Silicon Valley, Palo Alto area. We did a study of their front page headlines. During that period, we found that they had, got these out of order. These were the number of deaths during that period. And we found that this is what the front page headlines had covered by the Mercury News. They had reversed the differential and increased the differential. Now, when we got our results from this one, it struck me how astounding this was and should be to all of us. Because it seemed to me that they got it backwards. Now, imagine if they had reported the World Series backwards or the Super Bowl. They got it wrong. You know, everybody would be laughing and making fun of it. It would be, you know, across the nation, late night comedians would be joking about it. Here, they were doing something that, with that degree of error, having to do with lives and deaths, and no one was even noticing it. So, I think that's all that I have time for now. Thank you very much.